Why do we exist? Were we created with a purpose? Or are we just here by chance? What are we to believe about life, faith, and worldview? Welcome to The Universe Next Door, focusing on answers to the questions we all consider. The Universe Next Door is supported by the C.S. Lewis Society, Trinity College of Florida, and supported by gifts from listeners just like you. Discover more resources and continue the conversation at apologetics.org. And now, your host, the research professor of Bible and theology at Trinity College of Florida, author and speaker, Dr. Tom Woodward.
Welcome to The Universe Next Door, where today we are going to be exploring a huge and very important and timely, in the view of scientists who are researching this topic, a very timely question. And it's a heavy question. It's a theological, but also a very, very big physics question, and it concerns the universe. It's a heavy question, and it's so heavy, the heaviness exceeds billions upon billions of tons. I mean, the weight, the gravity, the attraction of this question exceeds that of even galaxies. Nick, does that attract you? Do you feel attracted by the weight, the gravitational tug and pull of this question?
I feel so much pressure.
I feel drawn, sucked in like the, what do you call it, the tractor beam?
Exactly like that.
That is pulling the Millennium Falcon into the Death Star in the Star Wars movie. Ha ha. So, but we're excited here on The Universe Next Door. We're discussing the physical universe, the wonders of the biological world, the physics and chemistry world, galaxies, all the way down to atoms and the wonders of DNA. But also we deal with the mental universe, the worldviews, the spectacular importance of worldviews cannot be emphasized enough. And I hope to be working on very, very soon a series here starting later this summer on dangerous ideas and dangerous questions that were dealt with by C.S. Lewis and a whole array of scholars. Some of them, even atheist scholars, shed light on these important questions dealing with worldviews and leading to the big God question. Does God exist? And has God made himself known in a decisive and a very, very clear and unmistakable way in the person of Christ? Has Jesus Christ, as it were, made it clear, abundantly clear, that his claims to be the Messiah, to be the God become man, are those claims credible? Are they solid? Are they on firm ground of evidence? Well, we're going to be talking about some of those questions here in the, just very near future. But I want to talk about a very important and hotly discussed crisis in physics. And this heavy question, this really weighty matter, deals with a discovery that was made early on in the 20th century, 1933. An astronomer by the name of Fritz Zwicky. Don't you love that name? Zwicky. He's a feisty fellow. He apparently, had some personal relationships there out at in his university in California that were not as smooth as they could have been. He was a bit combative, but at least he did great scientific work. And he was measuring the movements of galaxies. And there's a cluster out there in the universe, not that far away from our own local group, our group of galaxies that we inhabit, the Milky Way and the Andromeda Galaxy and 26 other local big and little galaxies called the local group, is part of a bigger cluster. And then if you look out about several hundred million light years, you see the Coma cluster. And the Coma, C-O-M-A cluster, has within it a lot of large spherical galaxies. And within that cluster, as Fritz Zwicky was photographing their movements over time and tracking them, he was saying something is weird. These galaxies do not have enough matter in them. The stars we can measure, we can see how much light they're producing. And the number of stars, if you calculate the billions upon billions of stars, even those added up masses of the stars would not hold them together. The tug, the mutual attraction, the gravitational pull would not be enough to keep them from just sort of flinging themselves outward like dancers that are trying to dance around one another but are not holding on in one of these skating, like the Olympic skaters when they're just doing a very rapid skating around each other, but they're holding hands. Well, what if they let go, you know, and they're not holding hands? Well, the centrifugal force, they would fling out toward the edge of the ice. Well, in the same way, said this astronomer, Fritz Zwicky, he said, these coma cluster galaxies should be flinging outwards, but they're not. They're maintaining their mutual attraction. So what's holding them together? They don't have enough star stuff to keep them together. And then other scientists began looking in the 30s and 40s and 50s, and then later into the 70s and 80s. And then Vera Rubin, a lady astronomer working at the Smithsonian, began to zoom in on some other clusters of stars and galaxies. And she said, I think Fritz Zwicky was onto something major. And by the way, his name that he had given all the way back nearly 100 years ago stuck, and it's called Dark Matter. Now, this is a very interesting title for something that we don't know what it is. Dark Matter. Have you ever heard such an interesting title for something that we don't know anything about?
It sounds like the title of a science fiction movie.
It does.
It's really cool.
Yes.
I
wish you had thought of that. You could have made $1 million. But dark matter sits now side by side with something else that was discovered in the late 90s. And when I discovered, I'm putting that in quotation marks, because now both dark matter and dark energy, something even more mysterious, which is supposedly driving outward like a guy's foot, pushing down the accelerator of a hot, you know, super, super charged, you know, Porsche, you know, a Maserati, Lamborghini race car. And if you floor it, if you put the pedal to the metal, and that car with all of its horsepower is racing down the road, it's going to accelerate and accelerate. Well, there's something that's pushing down the accelerator of the universe. And the scientists have no idea for sure what it is, but they, in the late 90s, decided, based on measurements of some of the mysterious objects out at the edge of the universe that were literally accelerating at a speed that they couldn't even imagine, they said there must be dark energy that's pushing outward this expansion and actually accelerating it beyond the tug of the gravitational pull of all matter toward itself. And so we have these two new components of dark matter, discovered literally by Zwicky and Vera Rubin, and that those discoveries set off a whole hunt. What is this missing dark matter? And then later in the late 90s, dark energy. So you have on the one hand some stuff, it's matter, but it doesn't emit energy and it doesn't receive or bounce off energy. You can't detect it directly. You can't photograph it. And then dark energy is even more mysterious. We'll get to that a little bit later. But let's talk about dark matter. I'm holding in my hand a book, which I read in, I think it was 98, 99, something like that, right before the turn of the millennium. It was a national bestseller. It's one of the most powerful, beautifully written books. The author is an atheist, but that doesn't keep him from writing a wonderful book on the weirdness and wonderful nature of our universe. It's called The Whole Shebang. Isn't that a great name for a book, Nick?
Well, yeah, that's another great name.
Yeah, The Whole Shebang. Timothy Ferris. Timothy Ferris. And Ferris, F-E-R-R-I-S. Timothy Ferris is known for, he's actually a commentator, something like Carl Sagan was. Many physics, kind of cutting edge, kind of like the, you know, National Geographic type of specials were done with him as the commentator. But The Whole Shebang book has a great chapter on dark matter. And in it, I'm just going to use a couple little quotes from that chapter because it sets forward the problem that we're going to talk about this week. And it's such a big issue because now there's a crisis because the scientists, I'll go ahead and just state the issue. The scientists who are trying to track down and have been for 25 plus years have been trying to study and do experiments and literally set up traps and ingenious, you know, very clever means of pinning down what are these mysterious exotic particles that are elusive, they're mysterious, and they can't find them. You know, they keep trying and trying and trying, and they will build chambers and fill them with very exotic, very powerful detectors down in chambers, you know, like 1,000 feet below the earth. And they put, you know, like liquid hydrogen and, you know, that's super cold. And they put cameras down there to see if any of the liquid hydrogen is disturbed by one of these exotic particles. And they'll wait for years and nothing is disturbing them. And so these ghost-like particles are never showing up. And they're saying, where are they? So I've just got to read the opening part because it's so captivating the way that Timothy Ferris introduces dark matter. And this is relevant, really, for the way that God made our universe, because the fine-tuning and the brilliant design of our universe either does or does not include dark matter. Now, I'm open to the possibility of it being either way. I don't think that the biblical perspective mandates or even guides you ahead of time into, oh, I think that's based on the Bible, you know, we're not going to find, or we will find, you know, dark matter.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. I think that if you have a prior, you know, judgment on this, you know, you can send us a quick note at information@apologetics.org. I'd love to hear your theory on that. If you think, I am going to be talking to a physicist who used to teach at Wheaton College, a friend of mine, Rob Sheldon. So hope to jump on the phone. He has one or two thoughts on this. Maybe I can bring those out next week in part two. But here's what Timothy Ferris says in his very captivating book, The Whole Shebang. This is chapter 5, The Black Taj. You've heard of the Taj Mahal?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's seen pictures.
Sure have.
I'd love to go visit it sometime, you know, the famous building in India. Okay, so here's the opening of the chapter of The Black Taj. Visitors to the Taj Mahal are told that Shah Jahan, the emperor who in the 17th century built the white marble tomb for his wife, Mumtaz Mahal, had intended to erect a second mausoleum for himself on the opposite side of the Yamuna River. It was to be identical with the Taj Mahal, but black. Interesting. The interesting is, by the way, my word, not in the text. Okay. Timothy Ferris continues, although there is no evidence to support this tale, the myth of the Black Taj endures, touching the imagination of all who have heard it. And then he continues with this paragraph too. Imagine what the public reaction would be if scientists were to find evidence that the Black Taj actually exists. That it is sitting there just across the river from the White Taj, invisible, yet detectable through its gravitational field.
Wow.
And that it is 10 to 100 times as massive as the visible Taj, and it is made in part of an unknown form of matter. Such a finding would make headlines throughout the world. What do you think?
That is interesting.
Isn't that cool? I was thinking, okay, I have a beautiful Cocker Spaniel named Darby. Okay, she is the tan Darby. She's 31 pounds, 30, 32. If you try to keep her, you know, at the right weight. 10 years old. She turns 11 this week. She is a wonderful, sweet. I just fed her two little peanut bones this morning, and she wagged her tail. She's such a cute, sweet, wonderfully loved Darby. Imagine that accompanying Darby, walking around with her in all of her rounds around the house, and when she goes outside, when we take her down the street, when we take her to the beach, there is a black Darby who doesn't weigh 30 pounds. Black Darby weighs 310 pounds.
Wow.
Wagging his rather substantial tail, and the black Darby is made up of, it's totally invisible and made up of a substance, exotic matter that no one has ever been quite be able to. And so you wonder, how do you know that the black Darby even exists? We can detect the black Darby because of the gravitational field.
Wow.
Now you know what dark matter is.
It's really hard to walk around the black Darby.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but the black Darby apparently doesn't need to be fed. At least I haven't had no barking detectable markings. You like that? I just made that illustration.
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
So there's the Black Dodge, the Black Darby. I was thinking of, you could have the Black Washington Monument that weighs 10 to 100 times as much as sitting there next to the gleaming white Washington Monument. You know, the Black, you know, the Freedom Tower they're building to replace, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Just fill in the blank. So what I'm trying to say is that there is evidence, and I think this is inescapable, because I'm reading now a lot of Christians who are, how shall I put it, they're dissing, they're critiquing, they're strongly attacking, it would be one word, they are dismissing dark matter as a fool's errand type of research project. That is, it doesn't exist. And therefore, it's just, you know, people who reject the biblical worldview who embrace dark matter. I don't think we can move that fast. I mean, I don't think we can go down that road. At least I can't see us going down that road. The dark matter issue is more complex than that. There seems to me to be some evidence, at least to me, as far as I can tell, that there is something that is tugging at the totality of, for example, the Milky Way. So let me move into the Milky Way and explain the mystery. Let's bring it down to our action. There is a particular kind of gravitational pull that is described in this wonderful chapter. And this gravitational pull that was discovered by, as I said earlier on, Fritz Zwicky, and the more recent researcher, Vera Rubin, this gravitational pull, which you can see in the solar system, is the inner planets move rapidly, Earth, Mercury, Venus, because most of the gravitational essence of our solar system is concentrated in the sun. 99% of the matter in our solar system is in the sun. That's why the inner planets move quickly. The outer planets move rather sedately. Okay, so Jupiter is strutting along at a sedate, rate, half that of the speed of the Earth. And if you want to go out all the way to Pluto, which is what relegated to a not even a planet, status anymore. It is something, I forget what the name, the new title, but it's...
dwarf planet?
Dwarf planet.
It's always a planet in my heart.
Yeah, yeah. It's always a planet to me. But anyway, Neptune and Uranus are still planets. But what we're saying is that there is something unique about our solar system where the matter is aggregated in the heart, which means that the outer planets will move more slowly. But... when you move to the level of our entire Milky Way galaxy, the outer edge of the galaxy, those stars are not moving more slowly. They are moving as fast as the inner stars, if not faster.
Wow, that is odd.
That is very odd, and that can only be caused if there is, in the visible matter, a larger halo, a larger, if you will, cloud of invisible, undetectable, you can't see it, but it's there, I'll call it by its name, dark matter, in which our galaxy is embedded. And so, to me, if you do the measurements and the outer stars are moving incredibly rapidly, and therefore the spherical shape of a spherical galaxy maintains its structure, but the spiral shape, including the arms of a spiral galaxy, maintain their shape and are not muddied up into a mess, you see something very odd. And you know, C.S. Lewis, in his books, when he wrote on the universe, described the universe as if it was thick. The vacuum of universe was thick with angelic realities.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I mean, if you talk about him coming back from Mars to Earth in the return voyage and out of the silent planet, it's such a shocking description. And so, you know, one thing that a materialist, an atheist physicist would never consider, but I've thought of, maybe at least in my more C.S. Lewis moments, is that maybe the universe and even our galaxy is thick with angelic beings. And so even though they are not directly detectable by ordinary physical means, maybe angelic beings have a kind of a thing, an essence that they contain, which although not physically detectable, is still real. And it has its own weightiness that cannot be, as again, you know, directly detectable as ordinary matter, but it can exert an influence. So I just, that's my two cents theory. I saw you blink your eyes. Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Okay.
That was just a lack of coffee.
Okay. That's a lack of coffee. Okay. So, but what we're saying there is that we are entering a time of crisis for dark energy, because there are the two major ideas: macho, massive, compact halo objects, which they have abbreviated as macho. Isn't that funny?
Yeah,
if you go down
clever.
The south of the border, if you're a manly guy, you're a macho.
Yeah.
Well, MACHO, all capitals, is massive, compact halo objects. Objects that are just maybe like in the order of a Jupiter or a Saturn. So they're contributing mass, but they're not large enough to glow like a sun. They haven't ignited to become a star. They've already checked out, and they've dismissed macho objects do not contribute enough mass. I mean, maybe a little bit, but that's not the missing mass, the dark matter. And then these exotic particles, these teeny wimps. And that's the other term, wimp. Are you ready for wimp? Weakly interactive massive particles. That is, they are weakly interactive with ordinary electromagnetism, because they don't bounce off light. You can't photograph them. They don't emit light like hydrogen fusing into helium in a star. But they are interacting through gravitational attraction. So WIMPs, but they have tried through last 20 years an array of very clever experiments, and they have yet to positively detect one recorded interaction with a WIMP. Now, I'm talking about not a WIMP, a person on Earth who is a little bit, you know, too coy and cowardly. You know what I mean? I'm talking about capital W, capital I, capital M, capital V, weakly interactive massive particles. So the macho and the WIMP theories are just really run out of gas. As of just the last 12 to 18 months, we've had a number of very embarrassing reports. And people are saying, were we really on the right track in the first place? Do we really need to address this whole issue of the universe? And we haven't even gotten into dark energy. We're going to tackle that next week, because dark energy is an even more strange and more exotic topic, which deserves its own discussion. That's the other. By the way, ordinary matter, according to this estimate, only occupies 3-4%, Nick, of the total substance of the universe.
Yeah, I'd read that. That's crazy.
And then dark matter is about 26%, and then nearly 70% is dark energy.
Wow.
So all the ordinary matter, ordinary energy, contributes less than 5%. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I mean, truly, that kind of statement in science is just a little bit shocking. But the good news is that this incredibly beautiful universe that is so glorious, that has this expansion that is fine-tuned to 60 decimal places, that is a trillionth of 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 1%. And that fine-tuned expansion is necessary for our existence. The Earth system, brilliantly fine-tuned and engineered. All this is so that life could exist, and most of all, that we could discover the secrets of the universe, that we could have this beautiful thing called rationality. But most of all, that God created us, loved us, sent His Son to die for us, raised that Son from the death, and presented Him alive to the world. If anybody listening to our program wants to hear more about this, just give us a quick shout through email at information@apologetics.org. That's information@apologetics.org. We're going to be tackling dark matter and dark energy. Part 2, The Great Mystery, next week. Be with us on The Universe Next Door.
You've been listening to The Universe Next Door with Dr. Tom Woodward, sponsored by the C.S. Lewis Society and Trinity College of Florida, and supported through the gifts of listeners just like you. To gather resources, continue the conversation, and support The Universe Next Door with your financial gifts, go to apologetics.org. That's apologetics.org. And join us again next time as we continue to seek the truth about life, faith, and worldview in The Universe Next Door.